This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at Dicetower.com.
There's something about a moose that I can empathize with. He's got a heart the size of a basketball.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 239.
Hey, hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. So we're going to get right into the fact on this show. You may have noticed that we opened the show a little bit differently. It's different music this week, and that's because our fact this week is about a band out on the West Coast. They are described as the harmonic equivalent of peanut butter and jelly, distinctly different and perfectly complementary. I actually was really intrigued because in the picture on their website, they've got a banjo and a guitar and a cello. They've got them like slung over their shoulder, which I thought was pretty cool. So playing guitars, banjo, and cello, their original songs and intricate harmonies have been enticing audiences from across the Northwest. I'm not really like advertising for the band, but their band is called Trillium 239. That's where obviously the fact is 239. And on the East Coast where I am, there's a brewery called Trillium, which makes really good beer. So, like, I'm pretty much all in on this one. The song that you heard a clip from is a song called Bullwinkle, about Bullwinkle the Moose. And you can find out more at Trillium239.com. It is episode 239 of Family Gamers Podcast. We have a guest on the show this week. We have none other than, I guess now, three-time appearing. I don't know how they say it, like, whatever. Anyway, James Hudson is here. How's it going, James?
What up, y'all? How are you?
We're good. We're surviving. We're making it happen.
Yeah, it's like tradition now. James on the 39s.
James on the 39s. We love it. It's good stuff.
Ooh, 339, 439, 539.
Maybe hey, someday.
If you're successful and we're successful, we'll be back here in
1,039.
10 years down the road, man.
We'll all be old.
I'm not ready for that.
I can't math that out to figure out how long that would be, but it's a bit.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, 52 weeks in a year, that's a lot of years.
All right. 239 is like 4.5 years-ish?
Yeah, we had some gaps in there, so we've been doing this for 5.5 years.
About that,
yeah. We took a gap because we, like, moved. I know.
What kind of slackers are you guys?
I know, right?
Get off while you're moving? Come on.
Ridiculous. I know, right?
Totally ridiculous. But anyway, we're here. 239. We're going to talk to James about Skybound, about what Skybound's been doing, what Skybound will be doing, all sorts of great stuff in the second half of the show. But first, we would like to remind you that the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial.
Did you know that that 401k you have from an old employer may be getting weighed down by fees? Brightscope recently reported that the average fees for small plans range between 1.5% and 2%. With plenty of plans paying more than 2% a year in fees. Luckily, your 401k has to report the fees that you're paying, so if you look at your statements carefully, you should be able to find the fees in there. To give some context, if you left $10,000 in an old 401k that was charging a 2% administration fee, 20 years later, that fee would have cost you almost $5,000. If you want help looking at your 401k or 401ks to make sure that you're not overpaying, go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers and set up a time to chat.
Thanks so much, First Move, for sponsoring this episode of the show. So, James, it's part of the show where we talk about games that we've been playing. So what, my man, have you been playing?
I got a long list. So, you know what? I'll hit you with a bunch. You tell me what you want to know about. How about that?
All right.
So, The Gallerist, Marvel United. I went back in time and played Shakespeare from like 2015. Played a brand new one from Bezier, Maglev Metro, Imhotep, Kingdom Rush, Moonrakers, Ruins of Mars, and Formicity? I think that's how you say it. It's a Korean game that TMG brought over. So I just went back and like looked at in my little schedule of games that I played recently, and I was like, these are the games I played recently. Yeah, that was my first Lacerda playing the Gallerist.
So. Yeah, so there were like four or five games in there that I want to hear about. but Gallerist was the first one that you said that I don't know if I could get a Lacerda game into this house because I just don't know who would play it with me.
Sure.
So I'm going to have to go somewhere to play it, but I'd love to hear about the Gallerist.
Yeah, the Gallerist, you know, this, same for me. I don't typically gravitate toward 3.5-4 hour heavy, crunchy Euros that are in that 4+ BGG weight scale kind of range. But this year, you know, I've got a game group that does enjoy it. Our little bubble group, we entered into a social contract. We've been playing games together. When anybody gets exposed, we actually had a whole month. We shut down for a whole month because somebody, you know, their family got exposed and they were near them. And they were like, we just need to shut down for a month. So I think, you know, we've been handling it pretty responsibly. But I'll be perfectly honest. I think that's what's kept me alive this last year.
Trust me, we have a couple friends who are the same way, right? I mean, they're not board gamers, but, you know, it works.
And so they, you know, earlier this year, they made me play Tekkenu, which was probably one of the heaviest games I'd played at that point. And now I've played my first Lacerda. I really enjoyed it. But I will say I was bad. I was not good at it, which is weird because Tekkenu, I did pretty well. I think actually we played it twice and I won the second time, like in a landslide. But man, the Gallerist, Christina just curb stomped all of us. And, you know, it was one of those things that was really unfortunate because about halfway through, I was like, she's killing us. And I've got at least another hour and a half of this game of just watching her just demolish me the rest of the time. Yeah.
I've heard that with like a lot of splatter games or like, you know, Food Chain Magnate, like you'll know four turns in if you're toast. And I'm like, I don't know if I could play a game like that. Like there's a part of me, the extreme Paragon nerd part of my brain that really wants to play those games. But that part's getting smaller every day, I think.
Yeah, for me, it was I knew I was going to lose. But then at that point, it was like, A, it was just a learning game. So nothing to get too, you know, bent out of shape about. And B, I usually play for the grins, not for the wins anyway. So then it was just like, OK, how do I be as efficient as I can and score the most points? You know, maybe I'll get second place. But me, Shu, and Tom, are the other three of us, we knew Christina had smoked us. We were all just like joking about playing for second place.
Right. Yeah. And that's okay. I mean, you know, shared misery, even in jest, is still a fun thing. Absolutely. Right?
But I didn't even get second place. So, you know, there's that.
All right. Well, we played some more Jurassic Parts. We released our written review for Jurassic Parts this past week. So we're playing that. Have you actually got a chance to play this one, James?
It is on my shelf of opportunity. I actually, unfortunately, I had it accidentally shipped to my office. And currently I live about an hour from my office. So I don't go in there. So last week, though, I made a trip in and I was like, oh, Jurassic Parts. Oh, Sleeping Gods. Oh, look at all these goodies.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And we talk about this in the review, but it's really interesting the dynamic of it's kind of like area control when you're trying to get your chisel count higher than someone else.
It's definitely area control. It's just as soon as an area is fully controlled, it's completely split apart and all the tiles are distributed amongst the people who had influence in that area. So you're constantly chipping away at this slab trying to get the fossils you want.
Yeah. This is one that I think you could play with Parker and probably Stella too. There's some things you can do strategically that are a little bit more cutthroat that you might not do with the kids that you might do with a more gamery group, but it's still cool. Other than that particularly cutthroat part, like it's not like there's super deep strategy in this game and you're building fossils. Like how cool is that? So
all things dinosaurs. Yes.
Yeah, real cool. Absolutely.
Fossilis is one of my favorite games from last year, just because, I mean, they didn't even have to have a good mechanic, even though the game is great. But I was just like, I get to use tweezers and like go into an excavation site and dig out bones. Yes. I mean,
like dinosaur operation. I'm all in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of games that are easy to pick up with kids, we pulled out Fruit Passion, which is being published by Eagle Griffin. This was a even lighter game than I thought it was going to be. It's one of those where you're basically just flipping out one card at a time from the deck and deciding, am I going to keep it or am I going to discard it? The main mechanic is memory. You're trying to lay out all, I think it's 8 different kinds of fruit in front of you. And you want to have all the numbers 1 through 5, but you don't want to duplicate any numbers. And the only number you can see is the one on top of the stack.
Hmm. Okay. All right.
So the main mechanic there is memory. And it's just as you get closer to the end of the game, you're like, wait, I don't remember if I have this one or not. Oh. And if I pass it up, I might not get the points. But if I take it and I already have it, then I definitely don't get the points. So,
yeah, that's not for me at the end of a workday.
Yeah, probably not.
That's not going to happen.
Proud of myself that I managed to beat our memory game champion.
The memory
son.
Maven.
I might not ever be able to do that again.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. Next, Maglev Metro.
Yeah, tell us about it.
Yeah. Allie over at Bezier sent me a review copy, and which thank you, Allie and Bezier. She's awesome. It is really interesting. It's pickup and delivery at its core, right? You got a train, you're zipping around the map, you're picking up passengers, you're dropping them off. But it's also a hardcore engine builder, because you've got a personal player board, and it's kind of neat. It's dual layer, so you're getting to slot these things in. Mm-hmm. And the production on this is dumb. Like, it's got a dual layer actual game board, and then the train stations, you like slot them into these big deep cuts. There's no terraforming Mars situation going on here. You don't bump the table. You don't have to worry about anything. Everything's, it's nice. And there's something that's always neat, right, about that tech tree kind of vibe where you're like, how do I want to build out my player board? Ooh. So it's definitely got that if you like that nerdiness. And it's all about efficiency. The game's fast for what it is. Like, it's got a good bit to it. But, you're toward the end and somebody's pulling the last few passengers out of the bag. And you're like, what? The game's over? The game's ending? Well, I got one more round to do? Oh, God. It's really neat in the way that it has two different kinds of passengers. It has robots, and they upgrade your board in a certain way. And then you have these four different types of actual human passengers that you can pick up and drop off. And then they're mostly for point scoring. So you're like, you have to like, how much further do I go into this robot build? Because do I still need to build out and upgrade, or do I need to really start focusing on scoring points? It's really neat. Yeah.
It did look very cool. So I'm glad to hear a little bit about it. We've actually also been playing a pickup and delivery game. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It's called Pebble Rock Delivery Service.
I've heard a little something about that game.
Yeah. A little bit. So we finally broke down and I ordered my copy from Amazon. Couldn't find it in a store locally, so I went with the big A. But Anitra, you played it first with, yes, I think, just Asher.
Yeah, it went real fast at two players.
Yep.
Real fast.
And then we pulled it out with the whole family. Man, number one, that board is huge for the size of the box. Like, it's this little box, and you're like, oh, this is going to be so adorable. And then it's just like this gargantuan.
And then you pull out this,
which I have no problem with.
Nine-puzzle-piece board. That takes up half the
table. I have no problem with. It was just like, there's just more pieces in the box. It just keeps getting big. What is happening?
We did that on purpose. Yeah, we did that on purpose. And mainly because part of it is just my thing is like my Stella, my 7-year-old, she has the biggest imagination. She is my little imagination nerd. And when the board was that big, it allowed, like, she'll get in the floor and just play with it on her own, not a board game.
Yeah,
she's just got she's just playing in this world. And I was like, we could make it smaller, but the smaller you made it, the more charm it lost. And mm-hmm. I wanted to be able, because part of Tristram's vision for the game was those standees that go around the outside and the inside. There was even more when we first got the game from him. And I was like, Trist, there's, it's a little too busy. People are getting confused. It's hard to see like what's what. We need to take all the middle island standees out. So we found a compromise. And if some people are like, hey, I don't like the standees on the outside, they just take the clips off and just lay the art down on those outside mm-hmm. islands. So it's even easier to see. I don't care. It's yours. Play how you want. But
right.
We went with that size because we really wanted the characters to feel, those boats on those standees and Maisie, the Met Whale going around, and Roberto, the Dread Pirate, there's something about the perfect size. Maybe it's a little too big, but if we're going to lose somewhere, it's going to be because we're extra,
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean, I don't really have a problem with it. It was surprising coming out of the smaller box.
Honestly, I think the next time we play it, we might just set it out on the floor instead.
I mean, it's probably, we all lay on our stomachs and,
Well, the kids will lay on their stomachs and you and I will creakily bend down. Uh-huh.
Roll like on our
side. I know this is totally rabbit trailing, but I bought a long time ago, I'm looking back at the name of the box. I think it's called Elevate, the Elevate gaming platform. It was a Kickstarter, and I thought it was kind of neat because it's like this platform. You can put it on your table, and it lifts the game board. Yeah,
I think it's cool.
It works great for playing games in the floor, especially because then you don't have to lay completely down as old folk like we are and get all the creakies. Or if you like to play games on your coffee table, because coffee table is just a little bit too low, even if you're sitting on the floor. But you put this on there, you put it on top, and it's just like that nice 6-inch lift, and you can tuck all your cards underneath it. It's pretty neat. It's pretty neat.
Well, we're in the middle of a Supreme living room remodel, which will include with it a dedicated table for not eating on. That's all I'm going to say is for not eating on. So it's not a fancy table. It's like a 40-year-old table, but at least it's not the dining room table, so we can leave games set up on it. So
yes.
I'm pretty excited for that one. But no, we really like that game. You know that Daisy, Daisy, Give Me Your Answer True song? Bicycle Bill for Two. That's the name of the song.
Daisy, Daisy, okay. Give me
you never heard that song? Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
I'm half crazy, all for the love of you.
It won't be a stylish marriage. Okay. Anyway, I would sing that song while moving Maisie around on the board.
Nice.
Every time. You're going to do that for the rest of time.
Yeah, literally. I mean, Maisie, Daisy, they rhyme. It's just a thing. It's going to happen. Yeah. But anyway, so we played Pebble Rock. We loved it. We had an absolute blast with it. All of the kids could play it, even down to our six-year-old. A lot of fun.
Well, and that was, you know, we made that game. I'm going to go full shield for a second. you know, we made that game with gamer parents in mind, right? Like when Trist brought that to us, we were like, we can develop this game to the point where gamer parents will enjoy playing this game. Kids will be able to just step in, roll the dice, move around and do whatever they want. Whether they're strategic or not, you know, they can do stuff. And then we really develop that catch-up system. So for whatever kid isn't playing strategic, they're at least not, as my 12-year-old likes to say, not going to get pooped on, you know, because that catch-up rolling, you don't ever have to take anything bad, you know. And so we really think, you know, we're really biased, but we think we really nailed a design there that's really fun for a family because I don't know about y'all, but sometimes I got one of my kids, Stella, that doesn't do well with losing. And so because she's always kind of like in the hunt, you know, with that catch-up mechanic, she can't fall too far behind and just get really discouraged.
It's the discouragement part that is the really hard part. So there's certain things that we kind of do to try to make it a little bit less painful to lose. Like whoever wins the game has to clean up the game in our house. You know,
nice. I mean,
that's one of our things. But yeah, there's something really helpful about the idea of like, oh, you're just rolling different dice. Like it doesn't feel like it's like condescending or something like that.
Yeah, the whole point was like just so because it never nothing. I hate that in games, especially a family game where you're in last place, you've made bad decisions and the RNG of the game just keeps curb stomping you into the ground. Yeah. Right. Then you're just like, oh, but this that so we remove that. But, you know, obviously the other part was we wanted to make the game have enough teeth, enough strategery that the parents are like, man, I actually have some agency here. I have some choices. I can go after this thing or that thing, or I can try to go after this hidden agenda thing really hard. You've actually got some paths to go there. And I think your kid's in the middle ground, right? So like my 12-year-old, he can play it strategic too, you know, and get a lot out of it. So, you know, for $25, as much cool stuff as in the box, as much cool art, as much game as there, I think It should be in your collection if you got kids.
It's a great deal at that price. And you mentioned something there that we noticed and talked about. There is a lot of art assets in this game. There's just a lot of art. Nothing's recycled. Like everything has its own art.
That's Triss's thing too. You know, we told him a lot of times we're like, you don't have to make a unique piece of art for every card. Like we can reuse some of these pictures. And he was like, nope.
No way, man.
Not going to do it. And I was like, hey, man, it's your game. You do what you want.
So that was another thing that we noticed. So we had a lot of fun with it. We're going to keep playing it. It's absolute blast. That's Pebble Rock Delivery Service. What company makes that again?
Skybound Tabletop.
All right. You have one more on your list, right. I think? You played Poisons.
Yes, I played Poisons with all of our children. So
that doesn't include me.
You're not a child.
Basically one of your kids.
There is a tiny micro game from Button Shy that we love. Andrew can take it or leave it, but the kids and I love.
I like I love the premise that it's based on because I love the Sicilian and the Princess Bride.
Yeah. So this tiny micro game is called In Vino Morte. And what you have is one person is dealing out cards to everybody else. And no one knows whether their single card they have is wine or poison. The only way you can find out is to drink it. So your choice is normally you can choose to swap and not see what you have, or you can choose to drink and find out. And the idea is the dealer is trying to survive, obviously, and trying to also make some choices on who else is going to survive. So we love that. It's super quick and fun. And we usually end up laughing about, you know, oh no, you killed me. But there's not really any meat there. It takes 90 seconds to play, and then either you can just play some more rounds or you're done. So Poisons from Ankama has a similar idea there, except everybody gets way more agency. Everyone has a card representing their character, and that's your cup. And then you have as many cards as there are other players. So in a four-player game, we each had three cards. One was poison and two were not. You pass the cards around the table, and as each card comes by you, you slip a card underneath. And then when the cards come, you know, when your goblet comes back to you, you decide, am I going to drink it or not? If you decide not to drink it, you automatically get a point. You're good, whatever. If you drink it, you're going to get somewhere between 2 and 5 points, which is determined at the beginning of the round. So there's always this risk reward thing. And you've got a lot more agency because, like, you know who you gave poison to. And you're looking around the table and being like, maybe this person was probably fine, but maybe this person gave me poison. And so it was a good time. It was really easy to learn and everybody enjoyed it. In the future, when we play it, we're going to add in the special cards that they allow you to do for future rounds where, like, it's not always as simple as wine or poison. There's cards that are like, it's half a poison. So if you get one of them, you're fine. But if you get two of them, you've been poisoned. Stuff like that. It was fun. It was really simple. The art in it is fantastically creepy. It makes me think of like Tim Burton claymation type movies that it's creepy, but without being scary. It just, you kind of look at it and go like,
I love games like that. I love games like that that have tons of interaction and the whodunit and bluffing and push your luck. Anything that has high interaction. I mean, y'all know Barnyard Roundup and Guardian's Call are my first two designs. And I was like, people are like, how many more bluffing games are you going to make, James? I'm like, I've got more ideas.
Are you really asking?
All of them, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I did find out that bluffing as a mechanic is pretty polarizing. So either people love it or they do not want to play it at all. So, that's, you know, thought it was time to branch out a little bit.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Well, you know, don't teach your kids to lie.
Or learn their tales, whichever way you want to look at it, you know.
Well, all right, James. So pick one more game on your list that that we didn't ask about that you want to talk about, that you really want
to talk about. I really want to talk about Ruins of Mars, and that's mainly because that is from Andrew's company. It's a very small Kickstarter, you know, kind of flown under the radar, and it's a really solid, really good game. I've played it solo, and I've played it in a group. It's got a fun little action selection situation going on where you're managing these two different types of resources. And it's got a little bit of a engine building tech tree build too as well. So like all these resources kind of overlay on top of each other, like, you know, like a good Euro should. But the thing that's really interesting is the action selection is it's got like these six places that you can go. And when you pick it, you pick all of those little tiles up and you get to take all the actions that were at that place, but then you have to spread them out everywhere else. So then you're making some other places really juicy for all the other players. And so that just continually happens. And whoever goes in front of you, you're just like, man, I hope they drop some good stuff on this spot right over here, because I need to go to that spot and get that extra bonus action. But I really don't want to go there if there's only like one extra tile there, you know, I need. It was a really, really solid game from a small publisher that you wouldn't normally be looking for their games, you know. And again, the Kickstarter flew under the radar. It only did like maybe I think $30,000 or $40,000, so it wasn't like a big neon flashing lights. If you like light to medium weight Euros in that $40 price range, it's got good art, it's got good mechanics, it's worth checking out.
Atheris Entertainment. So you can, if you Google Ruins of Mars Kickstarter, there's a pre-order link right there. Boom.
Nice.
So you can actually check out the game and maybe even pre-order it if you want to.
Looks cool.
All right. I think at this point we'll take a quick break. When we come back, it's going to be all Skybound all the time with some James mixed in. All right. We'll be right back. Okay, so I'm going to place a kangaroo, which allows me to move one tile, and then I can combine the kangaroo that I put down with the kangaroo that I just moved and the chameleon, and I have made a combo.
Combos.
This is a snap review for Combo Clash.
Combo Clash is a clever game of crazy combos by Nero Andre Silva. Originally published as Combo Africa by Loris Games in the Czech Republic, it has been reworked by Hub Games for an international audience.
The box says it is intended for 2 to 4 players ages 10+, and it takes 20 to 40 minutes.
So that is the game Combo Clash. Elliot, can you tell us a little bit about the art in this game?
We love the art in Combo Clash.
Every tile type is an anthropomorphic animal. Jake Parker's illustrations really pop, and his comic book style of illustrations really conveys action on every tile.
Yep, this is very clearly fighting animals on the board. The cloth playmat is a clever touch, and it gives some definition to the play area and provides a handy track to keep score on the edges of it. The score markers are simple, but we appreciate their vibrant colors and their different shapes. So Asher, how do we play Combo Clash?
Each player has a hand of 5 tiles. Play the tiles out to the board one at a time and decide if you want to use the special ability of the tile. Each of the 8 animals has its own special ability. Nearly all will allow you to manipulate tiles, and some will score you points as you play them.
But any ability must be triggered right after you place the tile. You can't save any abilities for later.
Your real goal is to make each turn a combo, a group of 3 or more identical face-up tiles touching each other. You can trigger a combo anytime. You do not have to do it immediately, but you can only score a combo once on your turn.
To score the combo, add the points for each tile in the combo and move your scoring marker. Then flip all the tiles face down that were part of the combo.
You don't have to play all the tiles from your hand on your turn. You can save some for later if you want.
When the board fills up, players move all the face down tiles to the discard pile. Keep playing until at least one player passes the goal score, then finish the round. So what did we all expect from Combo Clash? Anitra?
Well, Combo Clash was first described to me as a successor to Flip Over Frog, also from Hub Games. This made me both excited and kind of nervous, because Flip Over Frog often requires you to flip 2 stacked tiles, which is surprisingly difficult. It really cut the fun down for me, so I was nervous that Combo Clash might have the same shortcoming.
Since it said Combo Clash, I knew it was going to be a fighting game, but I kind of also knew it was going to be a comboing game.
That makes sense.
I thought it was going to be like Prisma Arena, where you're playing cards to do damage to other players, and maybe flipping over tiles to show that the creatures were defeated.
So what we expected was not exactly what we got. Let's talk about what surprised us in Combo Clash.
Well, it turns out Combo Clash is neither a battling game nor difficult to flip. Instead, you'll be placing creatures and using their abilities to try to get yourself high-scoring combos. And to block your opponents if you can.
What really surprised me was how quickly our kids took to this game. It's incredibly family-friendly and kid-friendly. Our kids kept pulling it out to play with each other before school and after school, and sometimes even showing their friends.
Thinking about that, I think the 10-plus age recommendation might even be a little bit high. It's not that far off, though. Our 6-year-old could play, but he did need a little bit of help to learn. A 9- or 10-year-old should be able to open up the box and start playing in 5 minutes.
I think we underestimated just how fun it was going to be to play out these animals, use their abilities, and try to put them together in clever combinations to get exactly the combo that you want. Not all animals score the same way, so you're always going to be aiming for the higher points to group them together and make high point combos.
With its colorful characters and remarkably simple gameplay, we absolutely highly recommend Combo Clash for families everywhere.
You can pre-order Combo Clash now from Hub Games or find it in stores this summer.
So Asher, so Elliot, what are we going to rate Combo Clash from Hub Games?
5 combos out of 5.
And that's Combo Clash
in a snap.
We're back.
All right, we are back. And before we get into the show topic, what we would like to do, as we now do every week, is welcome the new members to the Family Gamers community. Once again, you can go to thefamilygamers.com/community to head right into the Facebook community, or you can just go to Facebook, search for the Family Gamers community, and you can find James Hudson. He's in it. So this week, we would like to welcome a couple of pages join the community, which is awesome. The Proverbs 31 Mama, welcome to the Family Gamers community. Also, Polymath Plays Games.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And also James Adam and Allie White. Welcome to all of you, and I hope you enjoy it here.
Yes, and feel free to pop into the community, say hello, ask about some games, maybe share some games that you've been playing with your family. You can ask about Pebble Rock Delivery Service, and I'm sure we could find someone to give you some thoughts about that.
Chill it.
Maybe.
Hard.
Maybe.
Chill hard.
All right, so let's get into it. So we have five questions.
Okay.
For you.
I've got five answers.
We'll talk about whatever, but I'm going to frame it around these five questions. So number one, lately we've been seeing a lot of these, a lot of companies have been doing like kid imprints. So like Space Cowboys did Space Cows, Yellow did Loki, Lucky Duck just announced the Lucky Duck Kids imprint that they're doing. Skybound hasn't done anything like that, at mm-hmm. least not yet. I don't know, but that's kind of the question. But we've got Pebble Rock Delivery Service, which although, like you said, like definitely gamer parents can play this game. But it more so than anything else, I think that you guys have released so far, it's a kid's game.
Right? Yeah.
It's a game that is definitely targeted towards a younger demographic. So my question is, imprint wise, any plans to do anything, or should we just continue looking for the Skybound tabletop logo? And then the extended question is, what's coming next in that line?
That's a great question. And, you know, brands and imprints are really tricky, right? Because, but I think, you're seeing this specifically for family and kids games. And I break those out because family, and I would actually put Pebble Rock in family, right? Because
I mean, I would too, but I'm
kids is to... like your five and under. It's in like the toy section or the toddler section almost in like say a Walmart or whatever, or a Target, but either one, family and kids, you know, that's a whole different audience. That typically wants those type of games. We don't spend a lot of our board gaming budget. If you take it all, put it in a pie and say, what percentage of my board games that I own are family or kid? I'm going to say 20% or less, right? We spend our money on our big nerdy games. And so people, I think, want to make those imprints because now you're really going after a different audience. You're going after people who, you really want to get into Walmart and Target and Barnes and Noble because those where those people are probably buying the more mainstream mass games. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why you're seeing that. If they have a line of games that they know they want to do with that target, you need to start building an audience that's looking for those type of games. We aren't sure yet. Honestly, our approach is kind of weird. As we get good games, we just make them. And then we're like, well, that's a family game. So that's who we need to target. And we don't necessarily have a, you know, I'm air quoting so all the listeners can see. We don't have a kids line that we're planning on really like continually hitting. Not to say that we actually do have a couple other games in development that would fit that bracket. But like it's not a concerted effort to be like, let's march one of these out every 6 months and kind of start building that.
Sure. I mean, I think that there was something to Pebble Rock that felt like it was, I don't know if it was a component thing or what it was specifically, that definitely said like, this is angled a little bit more towards being a little bit more consumer friendly.
Yeah.
And maybe it's cardboard standees versus minis. I mean, it's kind of like the obvious thing to say, right? But there was something there. And I think that's a good thing because I think that you're seeing in, especially in Barnes & Noble and Target, there's a lot of crossover there. I think Target's the one that's really interesting because they're so much more mainstream than even Barnes and Noble is.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really interesting.
Which is funny because the people that we deal with there, the person who is the buyer for Barnes and Noble, she is a board gamer. She plays it all. Plays it. The buyer at Target doesn't play board games at all. So, you know, you just don't know. It's just, I think, you know, they all have their own approach to how they want to stock their shelves and how they want to build out what they offer. But, it, you know, it is enjoyable to be able to talk shop with the Barnes & Noble buyer because I'm like, did you see that deck building game at Gen Con last year? It was so all, you know, and she's yeah.
I get it. Yep. Okay, so nothing to announce at this time, or nothing definitively forthcoming. Say,
you know, the next game that we've got, and we have talked about it a little bit, is Kim Joy's Magic Bakery. Okay. So if you've ever watched The Great British Bake Off, Kim Joy was on about two seasons ago, and when we were watching, I was like, they did her intro, and her partner owns a comic and board game shop, and they were playing Splendor in her intro episode. And I was like, she's a board gamer. Blinka, nerd alert, nerd alert. Yay. One of us, one of us. And then 2 years ago at San Diego Comic-Con, she was there promoting her cookbook. And we just struck up a conversation. Actually, Ben on my team was a huge Kim Joy fan and was totally nerding out and celebrating, and went over there and was talking to her and convinced her to come by the booth and check it out. We started talking, and she was, and we were like, would you be interested in working together, make a game? And she was like, absolutely. So we've made a really fun co-op baking card game that's going to be $20. And it's like if the crew was made for families.
Yeah, you can go ahead and just drop the pre-order link in the show notes, because I guarantee you we're buying this game. Like, I get 100%. I don't know if you remember this, James, but you shared, like, I think a picture of you were playing a prototype of this. And our Claire is working on a baking, like, set collection game or something.
Yep.
And I was like, uh-oh, like, what's happening here? You're like, I guarantee you it's different.
Yeah, it's different because Ben came up with this really neat... it's like a mini campaign. It's only 10 sessions, only 10 play sessions. And then once you're done, you take these weird scenarios that kind of set up each of these play sessions, and you can mix them together for like your ongoing free play mode. And so you have forever and ever, you can mix three of them together if you're brave, because it starts getting pretty challenging. But yeah, it's just a really neat, and it really reflects the Kim Joy personality, because she is such a laid back, humble, kind person. Like, it didn't make sense for it to be a competitive game. It didn't make sense for it to be like, we initially started out, it was timed and it was hectic, you know, and you're like frantically putting things around and trying to bake things fast. And the more we played it, we're more like, you know, that's not really Kim Joy. She's not really frantic and hectic. So we're really proud of the way it turned out. And the other thing that's really neat about the game is we work with Linda Vandenberg, who is a pretty well-known artist through her Instagram, and she does pencil drawing. That's her style. And so everything has this hand-drawn charm to it. It's so neat. So Kim Joy's Magic Bakery, you know, you're heading off into the forest and helping her open up her magical bakery.
I like it. I'm on board. So what's the plan for that? Is that a direct retail?
It'll be this fall. Straight to retail this fall.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'll just jump right ahead. So what else is on tap for 2021? So let's see. This is what I know. Valor and Villainy 2.
Mm-hmm.
Lodestone relaunch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Maybe.
we can talk about that. Keep going through your bullet points.
I want to say there's like something Tidal Blaze in the fall.
Mm-hmm. 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 Maybe another Kickstarter campaign. I don't know.
Right. Maybe. I think that's all I know about. Do you know about any more than that?
I know nothing.
That's about right. Your head's in the right place. So obviously, we can start with the elephant in the room is Bloodstone. And, you know, first time we've ever had to cancel a campaign. So, yeah, we'd said that we were going to relaunch it in the summer. We started really looking at it, and we hadn't even put out anything official yet. We're still working out where we want this to land. But it's probably going to get pushed, because if we try to shove it into the middle of the summer, then it messes up Valor and Villainy 2 and Tidal Blades 2. It just makes it too hard. So it's probably going to actually push to after Tidal Blades 2. And mainly just because, too, that we're taking all the feedback that all the fans gave us from the campaign. We're taking it to heart, you know, and looking to implement things where I can. And, you know, that it's not, some of those things aren't quick pivots. You know, they're not just quick, like, well, pin stroke, that's fixed. It's like, we really need to think about potentially adding this into the game or things like that. So put a pin in Bloodstone. Don't know exactly when and where yet, but probably after those two. Next up is Valor and Villainy 2, which I am incredibly excited about. It is, if you've played Valor and Villainy 1, it's adventure, tabletop, RPG style type of thing, one versus many. But in Valor and Villainy 2, it's more dungeon crawly, legacy light. It's not one versus many. It's a co-op game. So the bad guys have an AI, so you don't have to worry about the one versus many anymore. And you're down there, and you're just like, it's campaign light, because you can reset everything after you're done. And there's a free play mode if you just want to play, just play the game. But it's incredibly charming. Like, James Van de Kirk, the designer and artist for this, is an incredible writer and has just this great sense of humor with the tongue-in-cheekness that is everything that's Valor and Villainy. So very excited about that. I haven't talked about this yet, but just so you know, there'll be an expansion that will allow you to play the first game in a co-op mode instead of one versus many. And you'll be able to play with all of the bad guys and villains from the second game into the first game. So it's going to make those two really kind of have a ton of crossover. That's a lot of fun.
All right. Cool.
Very, very cool.
Yeah, see, there's all kind of dumb stuff too. Like, you know, I'm showing you guys, but like the minis that he makes are just incredible. They're just so ridiculous. They're ridiculous.
Like drone.
There's going to be things like things that you can like take attachments off of minis and put on other attachments to like customize stuff. It's just dumb. It's got a toy factor.
See, Valor and Villainy for us, it just hit at kind of like the wrong time for us, because like right now, one versus many would be perfect for us. I would be the one and the rest of the family would be the many. But the timing just didn't really work. Like, there was something, even with the first campaign, there was something like really charming about the art and some of the story that was in it and stuff. But I knew it was like, it's not really
it was too much.
Right. It just wasn't right. So I've obviously been hearing you talk about Valor and Villainy 2 for a while. I'm really interested to see that come to Kickstarter.
Yep. It's just good fun. You know, it was one of the things, like, I wasn't interested in that sort of game. Wasn't interested in finding a partner on any more games. And James Vandekirk came and saw us at Gen Con, and he's like, hey, I want to pitch you a game. And, you know, we get a lot of that. Like, people want to pitch you games. You're like, oh, where's Gen Con? We're kind of busy. And I was like, just leave me a sales sheet and I'll follow up with you next week, right? And because I usually take a stack of these things home, and I always try to follow up with people and give them some sort of feedback. But he pulled it out and laid it down. I was like, stop. You cannot leave. Like, instantly I looked at this and I'm like, what the hell is this? Show me all of this. And then he came back and I did the whole like, okay, we'll give you 30 minutes, you know, in case the game's bad, you know, and you want to have an out. And we sat down and played it, and we're doing all this upgrading on the board and stuff that you get to do. That's just really fun. And James was like, guys, and he's super soft spoken. You know, he's like, guys, it's been 30 minutes. And we're like, me and Ben are both like, be quiet, man. We're busy. And we just keep playing, you know, so it's really great. Okay. And then this fall, obviously Kim Joy, and we've got the Tidal Blades 2 Kickstarter. That's obviously the big marquee thing for this year that, again, I am incredibly excited about this design. You know, as a product, as an IP, Tidal Blades starts with this story narrative where you learn about this world, Naviri, and you learn about these people that want to become Tidal Blades, and that 15 years ago we lost all the Tidal Blades. Mm-hmm. Well, now we're going to get to the second game. We're going to get to see that story arc come to fruition. We're going to get to see what happened. We're going to get to go into the fold and try to see why these monsters keep coming at the city. And it's a much different game. It is a dungeon crawl adventure game. And this design is so good. Like, I can't tell you how excited I am about this design. I mean, I'm super excited about Wonderland's War coming and landing in people's laps this summer and getting its retail, because it's, again, super high interaction. You're bag building, but you're battling in area control. But there's something so interesting. Okay, so I'll just tell you. So there's this grid, right? You've got a grid that is your player board. It's got 9 squares, like a 3x3 grid, right? Mm-hmm. And there's some stuff on the grid, and you've got your deck of cards. And so you draw up your cards, and then you lay a card down into the grid, and you can either activate a row or a column. And the card that you lay in that, you get its ability. You know, some cards will give you like some attack or some movement and some special ability. Some just have a lot of movement or a lot of attack. Some have like crazy special abilities that ping off other players. Well, you're doing this whole thing of like trying to be super efficient with your grid, because I can activate this card as a row, but then later I could also activate it in a column. But then if I put more cards in that column, then now I get a heavier, bigger move. And if by the time that you've activated a row or a column and it has 3 cards in it, you have to clear it.
Sure.
So you're like, okay. If I do this one first and I do this one next, then I can do a third one and have a really big turn. So I can, it's just, you're the whole time you're like sitting there looking at your cards going, how can I be the most efficient? How can I be the most efficient? Oh, but why? I need to do this thing on the board. And the whole time, the bad guys are hitting you with these debuffs, and they're cards that go on your grid and screw you up. And you're like, no, it has to go over this type of card, or it has to go into this block or whatever. And you're like, no, don't cover that card. I need that card. So then you're like changing your plans, because you're like, well, now I need to get this debuff off of me, and I got to do this certain thing to get, I'm telling you, for an adventure game, man, I've played a lot. I've played Gloomhaven, Descent, you know, I've played them all. And I think it's just as good as any of those other systems that are out there. And I hope one of the things that has become very, very clear with Tidal Blades is that people absolutely love this IP. They love the world. They want to eat the fruit at the fruit stand. They want to be dust. They want to become Echo, you know. And
Well, it's because you came out with the squishy fruit.
I believe the squishy more squishy fruit, more squishy fruit.
I mean, that sounds almost like you've got the game in front of you, but you also have a solo puzzle.
And
it's the interaction between those two things. Like, you've got to have a good solo puzzle in order to be successful in the narrative gameplay.
Because it's one of the things I don't like about a lot of adventure games, and I think this is why Gloomhaven is so good, right? Because you've got that solo puzzle with the cards in your hand where you're like, how do I want to combo these cards in my hand and be most efficient? And, you know, some other games where you're like, oh, I have basic movement and I roll dice and punch stuff. I mean, that's fine. Nothing wrong with a good dice chunker, but we wanted to be in more of that line of the Gloomhaven side of things where it's more in line with a Euro game, because that was the first game and that was kind of how we wanted to do it. It was just funny as a design notes, you know, Tim and Ben Eisner are working on this one again. They brought us a design. We were checking it out. We're like, hey, man, this is pretty good. This is okay. We gave them all of our feedback. And they came back with this grid system the second time we sat down to play it. And I'm telling you, turn two, they explained it to me. I'm like, oh, this is different. This is different. And then I lay down a thing and I execute a move. And as soon as I needed to play down my second card and it started clicking, I was like, oh, columns and rows. I can double up on this card. Ooh, this card I can do twice. Ooh, and a combo with this card. Ooh. And you know, it just in your head, you're just having so much fun. And then they're like, hey, James, we need you to do this. I'm like, whatever. You guys do whatever. I'm busy over here on my board. Because then you've got other little mini missions that you've got for your own character. You've got character cards that give you special powers that you're trying to activate based off the rows and the columns that you're doing. It's just a beautiful design. And everything executes very quickly. So you got that. So the mechanics are great. I think people are going to really love it. But the execution of the story, like when I read these bullet points that get us to the end narrative, because the game was always, this was always designed for us in our eyes, a two game series that really told a story from Tidal Blades to the finish of this narrative. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I told David and Lena, I was like, you guys, like, we're going to have to package this up and go find we're going to go beat down the door Netflix. Like, there is zero reason this isn't Dragon Prince or Avatar or, you know, Legend of Korra, right? Like, it is such a good story.
Have you
like,
been on our couch watching what we're watching?
I was tearing up reading the freaking bullet points of this narrative over arc, you know, and I'm just like, it's so good. So I think, you know, sometimes you find something really special, you know, and I'm just really lucky to have so many talented people around me. And I just most of the time shut up and get out of their way, you know, just let them do their thing. Oh, and one other thing, we've got a surprise game. I probably shouldn't even tell you that there's a surprise game, but there's going to be a game that we're hoping to drop in the fourth quarter. And I am not going to tell anything about it to anybody, except it's so good. And it's coming straight to retail. It won't be a Kickstarter.
It's so good.
It's like so good. Jumping up and down.
No, I'm not jumping. I'm not actually jumping. I'll be jumping in a minute, but that's exciting.
I am excited for this game. And the designers, we've been trying to work with these designers for a long time. And the stars aligned, the art came together. Right now, the only reason I'm being secretive about it is getting everything out of China right now and getting it over here is so difficult.
Everything's hard.
There's no containers. Like right now, we had a reprint of Trial by Trolley that's been sitting at the factory for almost a month because there's no containers to load the games up and ship to.
Been a problem for months and months and months.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that have happened. So it's just kind of all of the COVID stuff's compiling. We have a big wood pulp problem for even on the manufacturing side. So like all of our paper products have went up 30%, which have just like thrown all of our quotes out of whack. It's a mess right now. And you know, pandemics tend to do things like this.
With all of our experience with pandemics.
Right. So when your favorite publisher says they've got a delay or they didn't, like, cut them some slack. Not because I'm a publisher. You can yell at me if you want. I'm used to it. But like, this is industry wide. This is not just a a Skybound tabletop thing.
I didn't even think it's industry-wise. It's like, it's everything. Everything.
Absolutely.
Sort of a lot. So that's kind of crappy. All right. Well, we've actually gone over most of my questions, which I actually knew was going to happen.
Sorry. I rabbit trail. It's what I do.
That's all right.
That's what makes
you rabbit trailed in exactly the right direction, I guess.
It means you've done this before. Tidal Blades RPG.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Okay, so, and this is something, like, we knew, again, going back to that, like, people want to live and be in that world of Naviri, that we wanted to do an RPG, met the team at Monte Cook Games, fell in love with the Cypher system. I don't know if you've ever played anything through the Cypher system, but it's simpler than 5e. It's more, I'd say it's more elegant, more streamlined. And instead of like D&D where your face is like down in your stat sheet and you're constantly like looking through spells and like trying to look stuff up, Cypher system is more, and I'm motioning so no one can see this, but you're up here at the table, you're eye level, right? You're rarely down in your stat sheet. You don't need that nearly as much as you're just kind of always talking to everybody at the table and making these negotiations. And I fell in love with it instantly. And I was like, this is the perfect system for what we want to see in Tidal Blades. And so we partnered with Monte Cook, and this was something we wanted to do specifically. We have never written any RPGs. So we wanted to partner with somebody who wanted to take it on, not just as a license, just to give us a license and let us borrow their license to make a thing, but would actually hold our hand, write it, manufacture it, put it together, the whole nine yards. So we're partnered with Monte Cook, like at the hip. This is like a 50-50 collaboration co-publishing thing. And they've never done this before. Like they even said, we've never done it like this before. We've all, you know, just license it out. And we do our own stuff. So Shauna Germain, you know, from the Monte Cook team is the author, and she has just done such a marvelous job. I'm so proud of this book. It's like 400 and like 16 pages. It's huge. It's a core book. It's huge. So if people who want to dive into the world of Naviri and become a Tidal Blade, you are going to have an incredible opportunity to do that.
I think Claire might want to buy that book just to look through the art.
Possibly.
Oh, there, and that's the, like the Cuddingtons have been working on the art for a year. Like there's so much art in this book. It's incredible.
Cool. That's all I've got. You got anything?
I'm sitting here amazed at the sheer quantity of stuff.
Yes. You are a hardworking man, Mr. James Hudson.
I like making stuff. It's fun. It doesn't feel like work when it's fun, you know, even though there are definitely days I'm in the fetal position in the corner, you know.
That's usually true, that it doesn't feel like work when it's fun.
It's definitely work.
Well, if anybody manages to come up with some other questions, you know, other than something that we've covered on the show, where would people go on the internet to find you?
Well, I'm pretty easy to find on the internet. You see that stupid smiling face guy with the Widow's Peak mohawk art piece logo face. But I'm typically always in the board game spotlight on Facebook. Anything that says Druid City Games, anything that says Skybound Tabletop, you can like that, send messages, DMs. I do a James Matthew Hudson on Instagram. I've got a Druid City Games on TikTok. I do Twitter. So whatever your social media of choice, you can probably look up Druid City Games or James Hudson and I'll be there.
All right.
Sounds good. We are fortunate enough to have been able to land the same handle in most of the places where we do all the stuff. We're not on TikTok yet. I don't know what the heck we would do on TikTok. Just be sleepy. I don't know. I have no idea. But you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Family Gamers AA. Or like I said before, you can join the Family Gamers community. You can find us at thefamilygamers.com/community. Or you can just go to Facebook and search for the Family Gamers community and you will find us.
We also do old-fashioned email.
Old-fashioned email.
Old-fashioned email.
Right.
You can even get a pen and paper out if you like, and we'll be your pen buddies.
All right. So, fine. Here we go. Okay. You can write The Family Gamers, P.O. Box 528, Auburn, Massachusetts, 01501.
Or if you want to be slightly more high-tech than that, you can, in fact, email us, anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Andrew@thefamilygamers.com. I will point out, for our Four Science segment where I eat all sorts of weird stuff, we have had a listener send us weird stuff for me to eat.
To the P.O. Box.
To the P.O. Box.
I promise you that if you send something that is actual food to our P.O. Box, Andrew will eat it on air.
I will eat it.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what? Did I ever post the video of me eating the scorpion lollipop?
I don't think you did.
So I ate a scorpion lollipop, and there's video of it. So if you want it, you can email me or hit us up on one of these handles. You can find it. James is making a face. It wasn't that bad.
Oh, man, I couldn't do it.
I just wouldn't want to, you know?
You know what? I'll do it.
He'll eat anything for science.
For science. Right.
That's the premise. All right. Don't forget to check out our new Family Gamers and Play Games with Your Kids merchandise. Look at that super sweet Play Games with Your Kids logo. T-shirts, hoodies, mugs, all that stuff. You can find that at thefamilygamers.com/merch.
Please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already, and tell your friends about it. In fact, tell strangers about it by leaving us a review at Apple Podcast or wherever it is that you subscribe.
Yep, you can find us on Amazon Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. Family Gamers is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points. All right, I think that's it for the show. James, thanks again for coming on and spilling the beans with Skybound and all this crazy stuff that's going on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for letting me come and shill for an hour. That's, you know, it's what I do.
All right. Listen, you know, we love talking to you. I can't wait to catch up again. Oh, I didn't even ask this question. Is Skybound doing any conventions this year?
Just got like announcements of dates set and stuff. I just don't know how comfortable we feel with it right now, especially since we're all the way in California. So we'll have to fly to all of them. And like, it's everything's so up in the air. It's hard to know, you know, what's the lay of the land going to be in September. Right. Maybe, hopefully, double finger crossed, crossing my toes and my pinky toes and my whatever else I can cross, that we're really close to back to normalcy. But it's so hard to make that decision right now. So my gut tells me I'm going to feel probably more comfortable in like November, December. So maybe PAX Unplugged. But those in September, man, I don't know.
It's a tough decision.
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah, we're rooting for PAX Unplugged too. That is the show that we go to as, you know, as a family. So we're obviously rooting for that one. So,
but for sure, 2022 is our year, team. 2022.
All right, yes.
All right. Well, you can hear us talk more about board games probably next week. So until then, play games with your kids.